on this edition of The Self-Publishing Show.
It's been nice for me to know that developmental typical kids can take something from it that's important, like friendship and perseverance, but that is still speaking in a positive, hopeful way to people who actually do live this kind of a life.
Publishing is changing. No more gatekeepers. No more barriers. No one standing between you and your readers. Do you want to make a living from your writing? Join indie bestseller Mark Dawson and first-time author James Blatch as they shine a light on the secrets of self-publishing success. This is The Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
Hello and welcome to a brand new year. It is New Year's Day, the day this podcast is being released, 2021. Although we're in the past, you're in the future, which is exciting. We're still in 2020, so everything's awful. It's all going to be fantastic on January the 1st, 2021, isn't it, Mark?
That's the dream. We'll see. Vaccines will be rolling out around the world, so I'm ready to volunteer my arm to be stabbed with a needle.
Yes.
Quite happy that's happened.
I've had my flu jab. First time ever had the flu jab.
I had mine this year.
You did, yeah. They're increasing that because they're trying to keep hospitals, obviously, empty. Yes, it has been horrendous. We won't do a proper look back at 2020 today because clearly we're still in. It's like historians call the long 60s. When they do the 1960s, they actually start mid-50s and end mid-70s. I think 2020 is going to be a long year that will extend into 2021. We'll come out of it at some point, and then we'll do a proper look back at this whole period. But we're still wrestling. I mean, last night we're demand for our second and final payment for a booking half term in February in Switzerland. And you know, you just don't know if we pay it, do we get it back? And with the kids are desperate to go at skiing. I had to write to the headmaster what would happen if we kept the kids out for 5 days in quarantine. And I just want it to be at an end, Mark. It's almost like it's not fun anymore, this pandemic.
Yeah, well, you know, it's coming, I think. I know what you mean. I'm quite happy to kind of the jobs we have, it doesn't affect our jobs all that much, and that I'm quite happy to come into the office here or work from home. It hasn't affected my professional life at all, but you know, personal life, and also for kids as well. I mean, kids, you know, older kids like yours not being able to go to school at the time of exams, and then small things like I've not been able to see Samuel's nativity play this year, so I had to watch that on video, which is great, but it's not quite the same. And at their age, they only get, you know, he'll only get one more, and then he'll be, you know, he's six at the moment, he'll be seven next year. He won't be doing nativity plays after that. So you kind of, you know, grandparents. My dad's in hospital at the moment, so I haven't been able to see dad for ages. It is, when you think about it, obviously, we don't need to waffle on about the pandemic. There's more than enough of that if you want to, you know, kind of muse on what this year's been like. But, the professionally, fine. Personally, yeah, 2020 can do one, basically, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, we need it to come to an end. Okay, well, let's talk about writing things. I might give a little update on my writing, actually. I'm feeling quite chipper today because I had a bit of a breakthrough this week. And so I with the book where it was pretty much written, copy edited, ready to be published, and then I had second thoughts after some feedback and my own instincts on it, that it was far too long, 196,400 words.
Who told you that?
It's far too long.
Reminds me of someone.
And also probably that was symptomatic of there being other issues with it. So I had a developmental editor who I got from Readsy called Andrew Lowe, and Andrew read the book for me, gave me a really good breakdown, sort of about half of the feedback is just a detailed description of what your book is and how it works in various forms. And then half of it is critical feedback on what needs to change. And then a couple of follow-up calls with him. And the good news is that the story worked. He really liked the story. He liked the characters. He wasn't bothered about any of the character arcs or story arcs, since all that stuff's been sorted out, which is what happened with Jenny. But the book was overwritten, leading the reader far too much by the hand, not trusting your reader to understand what's going on and come to their own conclusions, telling them what to think by basically having this internal dialogue all the time from characters. So he wants to strip all that out and maybe just tighten a few things here and there, aspects of the story that you could be pulled out without there being much degradation to the overall thing. And I just got to a bit in the middle of the book where I was starting to make fairly big changes, not just taking out scenes or rewriting scenes, but not really sure what would happen in this particular week running up to a big moment in the book. And yesterday I just spent a couple of hours reading back through the 10% leading up to that point, 20%, just sat there reading it in the afternoon, which is a really good you've got to stop yourself making changes, of course, and opening up the Scrivener project. There's a time just to read it. And then today worked through that. And this morning I've been working since early rewriting that. And I've got to the point, I think from the rest, from now onwards, the story is actually quite tight and is fine from this sort of action-inducing moment. So I'm feeling relieved and happy. I'm at a halfway point as well, 100,000 words in to the rewrite.
Goodness. So a good little tip, if you're actually rereading something, is to take it off the device that you write on and put it onto a Kindle. So I would recommend exporting it as a Word document using Vellum to turn it into a file for the Kindle and then read on the Kindle, because then you can't. There isn't that much you can do to kind of amend the text on the Kindle. You can highlight it if there's bits you want to come back to. And also just changing the way that you look at and interact with the story can be quite refreshing, because otherwise you just, you know, I know, you know, I'm working on a book at the moment and, you know, just in Scrivener all the time, sometimes it is very useful just to take a step back and look at it in a different way. And by changing the way that you actually read it, you can have a little bit of distance.
Yeah, that's
what I recommend.
That's a good tip. Another thing I tried earlier in the story, I didn't think I'd have time to do it yesterday. I wanted to read it, but was to have it talked out loud by Word. So I did a couple of scenes earlier in this rewrite of just pacing around my office here, listening to the computer read it out, which has also gave you a different perspective on it. Mm-hmm. And of course, reading it out loud yourself but that's more of a copy edit thing, a sort of flow edit thing.
Yeah.
Good. And in terms of your books, now, funnily enough, we spoke last week. You've had your paperback published by Welbeck and put into shops and stores in the UK. And I said I would go into WH Smith and Huntington and have a look. Now, I only got around to doing it yesterday, and it wasn't there. But actually, about a third of the books weren't there. The shelves were a bit empty. I mean, there's not a lot. Some of the shops are struggling for stuff. And, you know, Christmas present buying is happening at the moment. And I think shops do look a bit bare at the moment, which is not surprising, perhaps. Anyway, about a third of them. So I had a chat with the woman there and I said, do you know, if you've got a Mark Dawson book in? She goes, oh, I can order that for you. And actually, I said, I don't really want it ordered, actually. I just wanted to know, have you had it in? And a paperback. She said, yes, it's over there. And she pointed over there and it wasn't there. And I think it's, so anecdotally, Mark, I think W.H. Smith and Huntington had your book and it sold out.
Oh, well, that's good.
Which is good. Now, there were two L.J. Rosses on the shelf there. Mm-hmm. Do you know, we haven't had Louise on for a while, do you know how she publishes her books into and gets them into W.H. Smith?
I do, yes. She has, she works with a guy who I know a little bit too, who basically is a salesperson for her and for other publishers. Works in publishing for a long time, and he'll go to the buyers and sell those books in. So okay.
Because I had a quick look in the front cover. In fact, I bought three books from my dad. He gets through books all the time. And I had a look in the cover, and it seemed to be her publishing company.
She prints them or he helps her to print them. I think he can offer that as well. So she's responsible for the print runs. He then is responsible for getting them into the stores. So there'll be distribution, warehousing, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But that's that was what I was going to do for the kids' book. I'd had a good think about how I might get those books into stores. And if Welbeck hadn't stepped up and offered to take care of the print, that's probably what I would have done. But we do that a different way.
Yeah. Now, if you're looking into doing this, I mean, it is, you know, it's a system that's very well trodden. We've been printing and distributing books in every country in the Western world and beyond for centuries. However, it is an expensive system. It's a logistically complicated system to operate by yourself. Here in the UK, we have a couple of big historic printers like Clay's and St. Ives who seem to print sort of every other book. And I know I've spoken to authors who phoned them up, you know, and said, you know, can you print it?
Yeah, but the costs, we've done that.
Yeah, and the costs are expensive.
Well, yes and no. Depends. Obviously, the more you buy, the cheaper the unit cost is. So I got quotes from Clayzen CPI, which are the kind of the one of the other ones, and CPI, the printers that Welbeck uses. And for, I think I could get the price down to about 80 pence per copy. And that was if that was on a spend of about £5,000 to £6,000.
Okay, something that's good.
It wasn't unreasonable. And of course, you know, we would have had to think quite hard about the sums, because if we were going to print the kids' book ourselves, then you're going to need to run off that many to get the unit price down to an acceptable level. But then you've got to think about, where do they go? Where are they warehoused? Do gardeners take them? How do we get them into stores? How do we get buyers to become aware of them? So there are lots of things to bear in mind when it comes to that. And you have to do the sums. I mean, at the moment, a $6.99 kids' book, with print on demand is what we're using right now. We'll switch over to Welbeck next year. But on a $6.99 book, we're looking at a margin of about £2. So, I mean, Amazon takes the print cost, they take 60% as their royalty, effectively, you know, the fee that takes into account them shipping it and their cut. So you're not looking at a huge amount of profit per copy there. And I think I did the sums a little while ago, and it wasn't that much of a difference between print on demand and doing it yourself,
okay,
in terms of the amount that you make. So, and given that Amazon takes care of all the bells and whistles, it's easy to do that. On the other hand, print on demand is still not quite as good as getting someone like Clay's to print it. So, you know, it's a bit of a compromise on quality potentially. So it's there's no kind of slam dunk winner when you look at those two. You just have to make a decision that's something that's right for you.
But it's fluid. There's no doubt. Mm. And I think organisations like Gardeners and Clays will start to tune into the success and the books that are being sold in the indie sector and start to make that pathway a bit easier. There'll probably be some, I guess, intermediate companies, which draws us into today's interview, which is exactly about this area. And one thing you can think, well, if Clays and the big print organisations based in the US, for instance, are quite expensive to deal with, what about printing in the Far East, which is where Jason Maletsky, today's interviewee, started looking. And he's developed a little service that does exactly that. And he has good relationships with these print houses in China. And he gets enough orders together. The unit price really, really drops down to make this a very viable option for people. Particularly, you mentioned your children's book. These books are primarily sold as print editions, which is a different thing from those of us selling novels, which are primarily sold and read as ebooks, certainly in the indie sector. Okay, well, let's listen to Jason. Really interesting guy. He's done a good job in building up this service. Let's hear about it, what it's all about and how you can get involved. Here is Jason.
This is The Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
Jason Maletsky, thank you very much indeed for joining us on The Self-Publishing Show from Hackensack, New Jersey.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
I just wanted to say Hackensack because I don't get to say words like that very often. It sounds like a great word. I have no idea what it means. It's someone's name, presumably, was it?
It's a great word. Actually, if you watch enough movies, you'll hear it pop up every now and then. A lot of movies like to make fun of it for whatever reason.
Yeah, there you go. I can sort of understand that. Good. Well, I'm sure it's a lovely place. Now, Jason, we're going to talk about a few things here, but why don't we start off with a little bit of your background and you tell us what you're doing in publishing at the moment.
Surely. So just to give a little bit of my background in terms of writing, when I graduated from college back in 94, I got into I opened up a small marketing and advertising agency. And I was just at the turn of when marketing was changing from drafting tables to Photoshop and Quark and that sort of thing. And I started to teach myself how to use Photoshop, which back then was Photoshop 1.0 or 2.0, whatever it was. And for whatever reason, I don't really know why, I'm not a huge computer person, but I just took to it pretty naturally. I ended up becoming an Adobe certified Photoshop expert. I'm not even sure if that's a thing any longer. Long story short, I ended up getting a phone call from Pearson Education asking me if I'd be interested in writing a book on how to use Photoshop. So my first book was traditionally published with Pearson, and I wrote three or four more with them on all different sorts of topics of graphic design. My acquisitions editor left Pearson and went to Cengage, which is a division of Thomson Reuters, I believe. And I wrote eight more books through them, all on the, as my agency grew, I started to write books on entrepreneurship, advertising, brand building, digital marketing, things like that. Again, all traditionally published. And I really enjoyed it. But these were very, very difficult books to write. 300-400 pages at a time that had to be done very quickly in order to still have some shelf life by the time they were printed and put out there into the world. And I got to a point a few years back that I just didn't have another one of those books in me. They're just very draining to write. And meanwhile, I was building my businesses. So 8 years ago, I had a daughter, my first daughter, and her name is Bria Page. And she has cerebral palsy. So she's, even though she's 8 years old, she can't walk or talk yet. But a super, super happy girl, really just a pleasant kid to be around. And one of the things that I think has helped her develop to the extent that she has been that I would read books to her every night. And, you know, being a writer, by nature, as I was reading her books, I would start to critique some of the books that I was reading, all these traditionally published books that were written in rhyme. Many of them just didn't rhyme at all. They were just horrible written. And I started thinking about stories that I could write that would be better. And I started to research writing children's books. And as I started to research and I realized, you know, this was not going to be a situation in which publishers were going to come to me. I'd have to start from scratch. I started that process. As it turned out, I had a company at the time in Manhattan, literally right across the street from Scholastic. So I just walked into Scholastic's office and asked to speak to a acquisitions editor. And I was very close to signing a contract with them when I started doing the math in my head. And I said, you know what, I could probably do this better on my own. I understood the publishing business. I understood marketing. So I thought, let me do some work. And I started to recognize that, you know, the center point of the publishing world is in China. That's where printing is done. That's where you can get books for the lowest possible price with the highest possible quality. So I studied printing there, and I studied shipping on how to ship things back. And I understood the international shipping aspects and all the different things that go into it. I started to understand the different sales avenues, particularly Amazon. And long story short, I put out my first book. I'm not sure if you don't mind me showing it. The first children's book, Ricky the Rock That Couldn't Roll. And this has gone on to sell 70,000 units, mostly through Amazon.
Wow.
So, you know, that was pretty good. And I parlayed that into larger printing, larger printings and a lot more titles. So I've got eight titles. And I started to build a following on Facebook of other independent authors who wanted to understand how I did that. And I said, look, I said, if you're going to do it, you have to do it the right way. You've got to treat it like a business. And that means investing money, knowing how much money you're going to invest to begin with, what your expenses are going to be, what your potential revenue is going to be, what the cash flow is going to look like. So you have all these things done in advance, and you have to give yourself the widest possible margin. And that means printing in China. Now, you say that to a lot of people who want to independently publish a book, and you know their eyes roll back in their head and they get this glossy look on their face because that scares them. And the idea of shipping it scares them even more. And they say, you know what? I don't want to deal with all that. I'm just going to go to Ingram Spark or some POD company like Lulu or whatever else. And there's no possible way that you're going to make money that way. The unit costs are just way too high. So I started a company called the IAPC, the Independent Authors Publishing Collective. And I started to talk with printing partners out in China. I've got a number of them. And basically I said, look, I'll bring you guys a large volume of books. I need you guys to cut me a break on price. And you know, they all agreed. These are all printers that, you know, I've vetted out. They all have they all have contracts with, you know, Disney and Random House and the large publishing houses. They all have been in business for about 10 years. They have in-house art departments. They've got footprints at the major festivals and expos around the world. And now when an author or a publishing company comes to me and needs a price for 1,000 or 2,000 books, I can give them the price and I can help set up the shipping for them. We facilitate all of that.
Wow. Well, that's really, really interesting. And I think a lot of ears would have pricked up listening to that, because this is, it is a frustration, I think, of print on demand, the price point, when you have a paperback that you might be, you know, the first in series you're selling at $1.99, and then the minimum price you can set it is something like $8 or whatever because of the printing costs. It doesn't really make marketing sense at that point, let alone trying to make money on later books in the series where you can be charging $16 or whatever. Okay, so this is really interesting. Let's just, before we get into the China stuff, which I really do want to get properly into, I'm going to ask you some granular questions in that area. But let's go back to the book writing, because I'm interested in the fact that you created this book, and this was a little bit of competition in you reading other books, thinking, I reckon I could do this better. How did you get to the point of writing the story? Where did you get the illustrator from and so on?
Sure. So, you know, when I was reading the book to my daughter, and I've always read her, you know, very typical books. I read her Pete the Cat and the Pow Pow Fish and all that. And some I liked and some not so much. But, you know, as I've been involved in the, the cerebral palsy community, and I've gotten to know other parents, I know that while I've always been fortunate enough to be able to take a very positive approach to it, I know there are a lot of parents who feel very despondent and very, very, very sad and lost because, you know, you see your child suffering and having a difficult time, and it's hard. So I started to look into the books that were out there for and about this community. And to be honest with you, it started to make me a little angry. What I found was that most of the books that I was coming across were very depressing. And they were clearly not written for commercial purposes. They were clearly written by despondent parents who were just looking for an emotional outlet. But in doing so, they were creating a very depressing sort of a story. These were stories where either these kids could have a good life in their imagination, or they were just, you know, I don't want my kid to have a good life in her imagination. I want her to have a great life, period. You know, and I wanted there to be some hope, and I wanted there to be some promise, because I see my daughter and she makes progress every day. You know, whether it's just learning a new sound or possibly coming up a little closer, taking a new step, there's always something that I can find that is a good thing every single day. So I started to think about, you know, how could I do that? And I also, you know, having a marketing background and understanding audiences and consumers, I know that the reality is, for better or for worse, if you put a character on a cover that is in a wheelchair or in a gait trainer, no one's buying that book. You know, people who are developmentally typical, they're not going to buy that book because it's scary. And I understand that. People who live a life like I live, where you have a child who has that sort of life, that's not an escape from anything. You live that every day. So I started to think, how could I send a message that was hopeful to these parents, but without being so heavy-handed about it that it alienates the rest of the audience? And so I thought about, you know, a whole bunch of different kinds of characters. And I came up with this idea of, what if we had a whole bunch of rocks? And rocks are never really characters. You don't see characters that are rocks, which is interesting, because there's always a point in every kid's life where they go through a they love space, they love dinosaurs, they love trucks, they love rocks. Rocks is always on that list. So I thought, what if I had a whole bunch of rocks that were round, but Ricky wasn't round? He couldn't roll because one side was flat. That's very metaphorical of my daughter, you know, being around a whole bunch of people who can all walk and she can't, right? And you know, and as I started to put the story together, I realized, you know, that the rocks are metaphors for her doctors and her nurses and teachers and parents and therapists and family and teachers who help her every day. And they go through in the story, they go through one thing after another of trying something, it doesn't work. The same way that we've tried every therapy on the planet, some of them don't work, some of them do. And the whole idea was that, you know, in the end, Ricky has a you know, they it starts to rain. They bring him down to a lake, and they put some mud on top of him, and they give him basically a mud prosthetic. And then with this, he can then roll, almost like being in a wheelchair.
Yeah, wow.
But you know, it sends that message without ever saying the word cerebral palsy, without ever showing a trainer. So people have really seemed to take to that book without having any idea what it's actually about.
That's really lovely. And how important is that cognitive? But well, we know that books are very important in the development of children. And of course, if you've got a child who's developing a slightly different stage than, as you say, a typical developmental child, it's really important that your daughter and children like your daughter are stimulated and have that opportunity for cognitive development as life goes on. I sort of feel sorry for people who've done it in the slightly clunky way that you describe as being typical of that, because I suspect there's very good meaning behind that, but you've come up with a very subtle and brilliant way, I think, of doing that. Well done.
Oh, thank you. You know, it's interesting when I go out to before live events were canceled completely, I would go out to do a lot of school events, and I would be speaking to 600-700 kids, you know, in the cafe gymatorium, and all the kids would be there, and I'd read the story and I would ask them all, you know, what do you think the book is about? And all the hands would go up. And of course, someone would always say friendship. Great. Mm. And then I'd ask, what else is it about? And more hands would go up. And it was about perseverance, or, you know, not giving up. And then I would say, what else is the book about? And all the hands would be down, except you'd have one or two kids with their hands up. And I'd reach out to them and I'd say, what do you think it's about? And that one kid would say, does Ricky have a disability? Yes, let's talk about that. You know, and that kid always had a brother or a sister who also had cerebral palsy or something that, you know, kept them from walking. So it's been nice for me to know that typically developmentally typical kids can take something from it that's important, like friendship and perseverance, but that is still speaking in a positive, hopeful way to people who actually do live this kind of a life.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So you've created your products, and instead of going to print on demand on Amazon and having the margins that you're presented with there, you are going to the printers. And I think, you know, there's printers in the UK. Clay are probably the most famous in the UK. I'm sure there are in the States as well. And I know occasionally we speak to authors who do go down that route, but it's expensive and usually you're in a queue. And I don't think I realized or appreciated that the big publishers were using Chinese factories quite as prevalently as they are. But you tell me that that's the case.
Well, you know, in the UK, I don't like to speak to things that I don't know a lot about. And I don't know the market in the UK or even in other countries. I know that the UK market, from what I understand, for children's books especially, is more of a softcover market. And where in the US it's much more of a hardcover market. Right. So I'm not really sure what the price points are there or the margins in the UK. In the US though, if you walk through a Barnes & Noble or really any bookstore and you look through any of the sections, especially that have color pages, such as children's books, cooking books, coffee table books, things like that. And you look at the copyright page, 85% of them are going to say made in China.
Right.
You'll have some that will say, that they're made in Korea. You'll have some that say made in the US, and typically those are by presses that are owned by Disney or by Random House. But most of those, they're still printing in China, because even though you could probably find other places in the world where it's even cheaper, such as India, you're not going to find it cheaper with the same quality and the same consistency. China has built an amazing infrastructure for printing, and if you are working with the right printers, you're going to find that you can pay a very, very low amount of money for a book without having to sacrifice the quality. You know, I have books now that are in Target and Barnes & Noble. And one of the reasons why that they have accepted my books is because the actual quality of them is so high.
So as you say, produced in the same factories that are producing books for the big five. So
exactly.
So what sort of price are you paying for a book then? If we're familiar perhaps with the POD prices, people might not be so familiar with going to a sort of printer here in the UK or mainstream, but can you give us an idea of the type of saving you can make?
Sure. It's always obviously going to depend on, you know, the size of your book, how many pages are going to be, what the paperweight is, what the quantity is. And like manufacturing in any industry, if you order more books, you're going to, the higher the volume you print, the less you're going to pay per unit. Now I have some people who come to me asking me for 500 units. And of course I never want to do that because the per unit price is just so high. And the only reason why I even offer that is because what I found is that if I didn't offer 500 units, it wasn't like it was pushing authors or publishers to push to print 1,000. They just would go to Ingram Spark, where they really couldn't make any money at all. And I hate to see someone throwing money away. The whole idea here is help these independent authors to actually make some money. So, you know, the prices can range anywhere from $1.50 per unit to, you know, $4 per unit. And even at $4, you know, that's probably less than half the price you're going to pay for a unit going through a POD printer.
Definitely. And that would include, so paperbacks would have color cover, but would be cream and black and white, whatever, on the inside. So a paperback...
And I'm sorry, the price that I'm giving you are for hardcover books.
Hardcover, so okay. These are hardcover books, okay.
These are hardcover books. Well, for paperbacks, it's even a lot cheaper.
Right, but you also facilitate the printing of paperbacks.
We do. We can do hardcovers. We do paperbacks. We can do board books. We're hooked up with the printers that, you know, not every printer has the ability to do board books, either logistically or legally, because the U.S. market especially has very strict controls over board books, because there's got to be a small bit of rounding on the edges, on the corners. They don't want, kids can poke themselves in the eye. There can't be any lead in the ink. Kids are going to eat these books.
Right.
So all the printers that we work with, they're all printers that are certified that they can print these board books. But I typically, we don't even have board books on our website, because when someone comes to me with it, they want to do a board book, I try to personally talk them out of it first. Board books are among the fastest growing segment of the children's book section, which is great. However, they are the most expensive to print, and they are the least expensive. They cost the least from a retail side. So if you're selling them wholesale, you're looking at razor thin margins. So unless you know that for sure that you're printing, you're going to be selling these books at a very high volume, you're not making any money on it. And I'm doing this because I really want to see independent authors be able to succeed.
Yeah. So commercial focus. So your minimum order, you say 500 is too small. Is it, did you say 1,000, or do you, what's an ideal kind of?
I'd say that if you're printing 1,000, most likely you're going to be able to get a good sense of whether or not your book will sell at the right price. And what I mean by that is that if you're printing POD, then you're most likely going to be charging $18.95 to $27 for a hardcover book. And no one's going to buy your book at that price because it's just way too high. And you'll never really get a good sense of whether or not you can sell your book, whether there's any commercial appeal. So at 1,000 books, my best assumption is that you'll be paying so much that you'll be per unit that you'll be able to break even or so and get a sense of whether or not your book will sell at the proper price point. But you're not really going to put a lot of money in your pocket. You're going to basically be kind of, you know, walking in circles for the most part. I'd say once you start printing 2,000, 3,000 units, then you're in a zone where you can make a little bit of money. And then you start printing 5,000, 10,000, you start being able to put a lot more dollars in your pocket.
Okay. And shipping? Presumably, books can take up quite a bit of volume, can't they?
Again, so shipping is the same. It's you know, the more that we ship, the lower the price you're going to pay for shipping. And shipping can be anywhere from, you know, 45 cents per unit up to, you know, $1.25 per unit. Again, depending on the size of the book, the weight of the book, how many you're shipping. One of the issues that we came up with early on was that we'd have authors say to us, you know, hey, listen, I want to print up 1,000 or 2,000 books, but I don't have any place to put them. You know, and I cringe when I get someone telling me, I'll bring them to my house and I'll put them in the basement. You know, and it makes me cringe because, you know, these are paper. Paper doesn't do well in humid places. Basements are not where you should be putting books. It doesn't take long for the books to start to yellow, start to curl. So, you know, I never like to see that happen. So ultimately what we did was we started to get warehouse space and say, listen, if you don't have a space in your home, we'll hold it in our warehouse space. And we will do the distribution for you. You send us your purchase orders or where you want them sent, and we'll take care of it. We'll send it out. So actually a very new revelation. This is literally just happened today. I'll be signing a lease today. As we've grown and have more books coming to us, we have not only one warehouse space about 20 miles south of me, but I have little storage spaces in other areas to kind of manage the overflow. And I've been looking to consolidate them. So later on today, I'll be going into a town called Westwood, which is very near here. And I'll be signing a lease for a small independent retail bookstore.
Wow.
It's temperature controlled, and it's got all the space in the world for all of the books that we're holding. Plus, I can have a retail area in the front where we won't be selling, you know, the Pow Pow Fish or Pete the Cat. We will be selling independent books. You know, so I think that's kind of another benefit to that we're going to provide.
That's very cool. So the shipping costs, obviously the numbers you order, lower price, and presumably shipping. I mean, if I ordered 2,000 paperbacks next week, could that be combined with some other orders you're getting for pallets to reduce that cost, you know, when you fill up a container?
Yes. So, I mean, here's the thing. For us, we try to do that as much as we possibly can. We'll be able to bring the price down if we can combine everything. Now, a lot of the larger shipping companies will do that, and they'll combine shipping of, you know, your books would be combined with, you know, a shipment of electronics or cigarettes or razor blades. We don't really like to do that too much because what ends up happening is when you start to ship, you ship books, for the most part, customs leaves you alone. Once in a blue moon, they'll want to check something out. But when you start selling, you know, shipping electronics and other things, you got a much greater chance of it being held up with customs. And if customs see something there they don't like and they send the whole container back, well, they're going to send your books back along with it.
Right.
And you really don't want that. You know, as we start to get bigger, we start to have more opportunities of combining shipments. And we'll say, okay, we've got four authors who are printing right now. Let's try to make sure that we're printing all of them at the same time so we can ship them at the same time. And that way we can give a little bit of a discount on the shipping. The question becomes, where are we shipping them to? It doesn't really help us out very much if we've got four authors who are shipping, and each one of them shipping to Florida, one shipping to Texas, one shipping to Guam, that doesn't help us out very much. If they're all shipping to, let's say, our warehouse in New Jersey, well, that's a different story. Then we can definitely give you a price break on it.
Yeah.
We always look for opportunities.
You mentioned customs. What is the situation importing printed books?
So for right now, we actually really don't have any you know, difficulties right now. We haven't actually, even through this whole COVID mess, we haven't had any real problems. You know, when you start to hear that the supply chain is you know, having difficulties printing, you know, shipping from China, you're talking, you know, you're watching, you know, CNBC or some program about the, you know, Wall Street, whatever else, and they're talking about, you know, Gillette shipping 10 million razors. You know, that supply chain is much more complicated than it is for us, where we're, you know, printing a couple thousand books for an author, or even, you know, 10,000 books for an author. That really doesn't have that much of a difficulty. It's a pretty straightforward supply chain for us.
And they can be imported customs free?
So it depends on the type of books. You know, as of right now, there are no tariffs on children's books. Now, if you were printing a cookbook, there might be some tariffs. I think right now the tariffs are kind of canceled for all books. I'm not 100% sure about that, but right. I'm pretty sure. For a while before COVID, there was on children's books, there was a 15% tariff, which even with 15%, you're still paying a lot less than you're paying with the US printer or POD. That then dropped to 7.5%, and then that dropped to 0%. And there doesn't seem to be any danger right now of tariffs being implemented again. Definitely, I don't think until you know, COVID is no longer much of a concern. You know, they're not really hard, you know, trying to make life any more difficult for U.S. Yeah. manufacturers.
And I guess obviously I'm in the UK, so I'd have to look into the specific rules here that will vary from country. In fact, they'll vary again next year when we have a new trade situation. Anyway. And what about actually then selling them? I personally use POD, and I don't even have experience using Ingram Spark. People listening will have that. But how easy would it, if I've got my ebook on KDP on my bookshelf, how easy is it for me to have physical books that I've printed? How do I arrange fulfillment? How do I integrate it with, so it's there on the button when people are looking at my book?
So that's a great question. There are a number of different you know, platforms on Amazon. You mentioned KDP, so you're talking about Amazon. There are a number of different platforms on Amazon alone that will, you know, that you can look into. One of the ones that I've liked in the past that doesn't seem to be, you know, moving very much right now is a platform called Amazon Advantage. Amazon Advantage was strictly for content creators. That's been closed down to new, it still exists, but it's been closed down to new members for the last year and a half or so. Although I'm starting to see some rumblings that people are getting into it now after a year or so wait on a list. Now, my guess is that at some point it will come back. I'm just not sure when that is. In the meantime, there's also something called Amazon Seller Central. And with Seller Central, you can sell your books as though you have a small store on Amazon. And you can choose to have them shipped one of two ways. You can either ship them yourself, or you can have them shipped through what's called FBA, Fulfillment by Amazon, which means you're going to send Amazon 100 or 200 books. They're going to keep them on their shelves. And when a customer comes in and buys a book, they're going to ship them for you. That's a little more expensive. If you don't want to do that and you want to have them shipped yourself, but let's say you're in the UK or you're on the other side of the country than we are, you have your books put into, let's say, our warehouse, or there's other warehouses in the US. You use that as your headquarters. And basically when a purchase order comes in, you just let us know that purchase order is in, and the warehouse takes the book off the shelf, puts it into an envelope, sends it out for you. And that's basically all there is to it. I actually kind of prefer that way. I think it's a little bit cheaper than using Fulfillment by Amazon. Plus, FBA, Amazon won't allow you to put anything else into an envelope. Someone buys a book, they're putting that book into the envelope, and that's it. When you're working, let's say, through yourself in your own living room, or you're working through a warehouse and fulfillment center like us, you can give us 8.5 by 11 flyers that we can put in with the book. And you know, I sell a few books on Seller Central. And when I had the books fulfilled, I always put a sheet in saying, hey, listen, if you like this book, you might also like these other five books that I've written. And by the way, if you're a teacher, why don't you look to me for an author visit? You know, I'll make $1,500 on an author visit, and I've sold, you know, three or four author visits through those sheets alone. That's a lot more money that I'm making than just on the books.
Yeah, that's interesting. And in terms of the reader, when they're shopping, if you're using Seller Central or Amazon Advantage, when they go to buy your book, is the ebook and the print version, are they in the same place as they are with POD?
Yeah, even if you get a hardcover printed from China, you can link all of them. All you need to do is actually just let Amazon know these three books need to be linked together.
Okay.
You can do all three. I'll typically launch a a book on KDP before the book actually comes out, just because an ebook allows, Amazon allows you to have 5 days to give it away for free. So I'll put it up on Kindle, on KDP, and I will use those 5 days to give the book out for free just to get some early reviews. And then as soon as the hardcover comes out, I take the ebook down because I make a lot more money on the hardcover, and I really don't want to give people the option to buy my book in a way that I'm going to make less money on it.
Yeah. So how's it going? How much customer have you got from authors?
It's actually going quite well. You know, we started about 2.5 years ago. I'd say this time last year, at the most, we had 5 clients at a time that we were doing. And right now we have 16 customers that we are currently working on. And we have probably 40 proposals that are out there in the universe. And I'd say at least half of them are probably a very high likelihood that they're going to come through. So, you know, we're growing very, very quickly. And again, obviously the quicker that we grow, we can also bring our prices down on both printing and shipping, because the higher the volume, the lower the costs are for us as well. You know, I'm never going to have this conversation with you from the deck of my yacht because of the money that we make on the IAPC. You know, you look at us compared to, let's say, some of our competitors, like let's say Print Ninja, for example, which Print Ninja has been around a lot longer than us, and they're a solid company. They do the same thing that we do, the printing and shipping from China. And they also work with great printers. They've got great customer service, but they're more expensive than we are. And what the best that I can figure is that the reason why that is my guess is that they kind of assume that 90%+ of everyone who prints through them will never have a second printing. They're not going to know how to sell their books, so that they're never going to do a second printing. And my theory on it is, let's keep the costs down. And maybe if we keep the costs down, these authors can then have some extra money to do some marketing, some pay-per-click marketing on Amazon or Facebook or Instagram, or, you know, reaching out to some influencers. Maybe they can sell their books. And then if they sell their books, then they'll come back for a second printing, and the second printing will do 5,000 instead of 2,000, or 10,000 instead of 5,000. So I'd rather take less money per printing and, you know, invest in these authors' futures and give them a real shot to make some money and expand their businesses out.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So you're moving into, you say, with the extra bit, with the warehouse space, the shop, fulfillment, this is a little publishing empire, the sort of physical side of publishing for you?
Well, I empire might be a strong word. I would love, in my imagination, it's an empire. In reality, it's still a small and growing business, but it's been doing very, very well. We've been able to help a lot of authors. I take a very personal approach to it. We have a group on Facebook that's got about 30,000 members. I think it's probably the largest group on Facebook for independent children's book authors. We're trying now to expand out into you know, cookbooks and other types of books, and not just children's books. Every month or so, I will hold a Zoom brainstorming meeting, basically where I'm just saying to all the authors who are printed with us, listen, just jump on this call, and there's no charge, and let's just all talk about marketing. If you're having a hard time selling your book, throw it out there. Maybe myself or some of the other authors might be able to give you some advice on how to sell more books. You know, and that's things I think that other companies don't really do. They take your files, they print them, and then they're done with you. You know, I want to help see it through and give some ideas and advice on how can you sell your books.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot more we can do here.
It's great. It makes perfect sense to be invested in the success of your clients, right? So they come back and print more books.
Right, exactly. And also, you know, I feel like I had a good amount of help when I was starting up my businesses. And I'm fortunate enough to be able to, you know, give advice and help others. You know, I'm, you know, if I didn't have the IAPC, I would be doing just fine just with the publishing arm of what I'm doing. You know, my own books. I'm doing 3 new books every year. But the IAPC is fun for me. It gives me a chance to really work with a lot of new authors and give them some real advice. And I like seeing that they have a shot to put some money into their pocket and to grow their own publishing empires. It also keeps them away from these vanity presses, which I have a real, real hard time with. I hate seeing someone get stuck with one of these guys.
Yeah. And there are a few of those around. Can you give us an idea of how, well, where do people go to online? I'm just having a quick look if I can find it actually. IAPC?
So it's IAPC, Independent Authors Publishing Collective, IAPCbooks.com. And if you go there, there's all the information you need about it. There's an online calculator, so you can put in all the specs for your book, and you can see how much it would cost you for printing and for shipping to our warehouse in New Jersey. If you want a shipping price somewhere else, you just let us know, and we'll let us know the zip code and or where you want it, and we'll give you a custom price for that. And we also, we always encourage people, look at our price, and then we have links over to Print Ninja. Go to Print Ninja also, put the same specs in there. If the price there for the same specs is cheaper, we'll match their price and take 10% off additionally from that. You know, we'll always make sure we come in less than they are. Most of the time we come in less than they are anyway, but in the rare chance that we are actually more expensive, we'll match them minus 10%.
Yeah, that's interesting you mentioned about the vanity presses, because it's actually quite difficult for you and this website not to look like them, isn't it? Because they do kind of look, be your own publisher and give us $2,500 and we'll give you your 5 copies to get you going and all that stuff, which is really annoying. But you've got a genuine service, genuinely an indie author trying to help other indie authors, and yet the language is quite difficult for you to differentiate yourself so people notice that.
It is. You know, I spend a lot of time telling people we are not a publisher. We don't want to be a publisher. We have no say over your creative. I don't even want to look at the creative before it goes to press, to be honest with you. We take no royalties. We do not get involved in sales. That's all you. You are your own publisher. I encourage everyone to open an LLC before they get started. You're not just an author. You are your own publishing company. We are publishing services. That's different than being a publisher. Yeah. You know, what I have a hard time with these vanity presses is that they will say that they are publishers. And basically what you're doing is you're paying $4,000 or $5,000 basically for the right to tell people my publisher said, to as many people who will actually hear you say it. You know, these guys know that there is, unlike someone who wants to open a toaster manufacturing company, this is a book is someone's story. You know, it's about their kids or about their puppies, or it's about something that happened to them, or it's about something creative in their mind. And people are very passionate about it. And their dream is to find a publisher. Many people mistakenly think that the only way to that if you can't find a traditional publisher, that, you know, indie publishing is kind of like the loser's way of doing it. And it's not. You know, I did this by choice. And this is the way to do it if you want to make money and really, you know, benefit from the work that you're doing. But these vanity publishers know that there's a lot of emotional value in saying that I have a publisher. You know, you don't have a publisher. You have a publishing services company that is charging you for every aspect of this. And all you're able to do is pay them for the right to have a handful of books that you'll never, ever be able to make money on. You know, we don't do that. We're not a publisher. We are publishing services, and we keep our prices low enough that I can show you the math that you can make some money on it. Yeah. That's the difference.
That is a frustrating element to what's going on at the moment. It's good to have this conversation to draw that distinction. The lead time for typically an author who comes to you in terms of having the books physically in the US?
So typically we say it's about 28 days for printing, and that includes getting a physical sample. If you are not, you know, if you're not happy with the physical sample, you get your deposit back. If you are, you let us know, we move forward with the next step. And then it's the whole thing is about 28 days for printing, including that sample. Then once it's printed, the shipping can take anywhere between 30 and 40 days, depending on where we're shipping it to. If we're shipping it to the West Coast, obviously it's going to be a shorter trip than shipping it to the East Coast. But you're typically looking at maybe 65 days. You're looking at 2.5 months, I'd say. It's rare that customs ever puts a hold on anything. If they do, you're looking at maybe another week. So I typically like to say to people, plan for 3 months. And then you'll be happy when it comes in earlier. But, you know, we're looking at 2.5 to 3 months. I think the hardest part is getting the files right the first time. Mm-hmm. For the very first book. A lot of authors, they have an idea for a story. They can write competently. They find an illustrator. Just because someone illustrates does not necessarily mean they know how to set up files. So a lot of times we'll find that files will come to us without bleed, or it's the wrong number of pages, or things, you know, it's RGB instead of CMYK. So I do encourage people to find a production designer. If they can't find one, we'll help you out with that, and we'll find a production designer for you. It just helps the process go a little bit faster. Typically, by the time you get to the second or third book or second or third printing, it goes a lot more easily. The other thing that I like to remind people is that when you print, let's say you print 5,000 books, I do always encourage people to get the funds up beforehand. Do a Kickstarter, get some investors. I did both. I was able to raised $24,000 for my first book, $14,000 through Kickstarter, $10,000 through investors. And the reason why I wanted so much is because, A, I wanted some money to not only cover the first printing and shipping, but also I wanted to have some money for marketing. And I also recognized that with a 3-month lead time, you can't wait until your stock is completely depleted before going back to print again. You're going to need to print again when you're at, when your inventory is down to, let's say, 60%. You're going to want to go back and print more, because then 3 months later, your inventory is going to be down to 20%. You don't want to run the risk of running out of stock.
Yeah.
So, you know, your cash flow is not likely to be up high enough for you to simply be able to afford a second printing based on the sales of that first printing. You need to have more. I mean, this is, like I tell everyone, this is, you know, for what I do, it's writing children's books, but it's not child's play.
Right.
You know, this is like running any business, and any business, you're going to want to have some cash reserves on hand for emergency purposes and to, you know, continue to build up your inventory.
Well, it's a little glimpse into our friends in the traditional industry and what sort of logistical planning they have to do. And it isn't, you're right, it isn't straightforward. And especially if your book, for whatever reason, hits a seam of like an oil burst, is suddenly everyone's after it and recommendations, you don't want to suddenly have a 2 month gap. Because that bubble may have burst by the time, and that does happen in the industry. I think sometimes they suddenly see a book flying off the shelf and they can't get it replenished quickly enough, and they miss that opportunity. Happens, and it used to happen in the record industry as well. Miss number one.
Yeah. All you need to do is have one influencer read your book who has, you know, a really large following, and suddenly, you know, you're selling books a lot faster than you expected.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would always recommend to make sure that you plan this like a real business. You know, you get your accountants, you create your spreadsheets, you plan everything out well in advance.
Well, I think you say it won't be an empire and we won't talk to you from the deck of your yacht, but, you know, Jeff Bezos started Hawking books out of his garage, didn't he? And this is not too dissimilar. I mean, it's obviously connected. Well, I'm excited by this. I think a lot of people will be very interested in it. I'm sure people will want to check that out at iapcbooks.com. And I'm going to have a little play with the price quote thing just to see what our paperbacks would come out that we're marketing at the moment. Just be an interesting experience. And I think a friend of mine who used to be in the cardboard box industry, and I talked to him occasionally about his business, I'm pretty certain he is now in the Amazon fulfillment business. He's around the corner from me, so that might even be an easy way of integrating that. I'm really interested in it, and I admire your entrepreneurial spirit, Jason.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's being an entrepreneur is the closest thing I've ever had to taking drugs. It's a rush that you get from doing these things. So, you know, I enjoy all of it.
Yeah. Certainly, we wish you all the best with your book and with your daughter, and I'm sure she's in great hands and going to have a good series of books to stimulate her.
Thank you very much. I hope so too.
This is the Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
There you go. So it seems like every day, every week in our sector, things are changing and opening up.
Yeah, there's always... people identify problems or bottlenecks, and then they develop solutions. Perhaps that they'll originally do something that helps them do something themselves, and then as they demonstrate that what they've done works, they'll then roll that out to others and maybe make a business out of that. So, hats off to Jason. It is clearly a pain point that indies will otherwise struggle to sort out, and offering a service that allows them to do something like that at a good price is a really good idea. So, good luck to him.
Yeah. So there's Jason Maletsky for you. Thank you very much indeed, Jason. So 1st of January 2021, are you a New Year's resolution guy? I don't think you are you?
Not really. No, it's I don't. These things roll over, don't they? So, I mean, this is going to be busy. There's loads of things going on. Professionally, we're buying some property this year. As I posted in the Facebook group a couple of weeks ago, as this goes out, we've been hoping to buy the barn next to our house and turn that into office space. So as this goes out, hopefully there'll have been some progress on there. We think we've bought a second house down on the coast as well, so that's all kind of ticking off. So, yeah, tons going on, but it doesn't, I don't really get to the 1st of January and think, yeah, this is what I'm going to do this year. I've probably, hopefully, already been doing it anyway. So just kind of more of the same is the plan.
Yeah. Well, look, we'll talk about this a little bit more next week because we'll be a few days away from the opening of Ads for Authors, and there are a couple of important new additions to it. So a brand new BookBub for Ads for Authors course and a new and improved Amazon Ads for Authors course. They are currently, as we're speaking and recording this, currently very much in progress at the moment, and they'll be rolled out as part of this Ads for Authors package. That's going to be open on the 13th of January, but we'll save a bit more of the detail about that for next week, I think. That's it. Happy New Year, Mark. Did you have a nice Christmas?
I hope so. As we record this, it's looking, I'll be driving to Lowestoft to pick my mum up, driving her back again, and all depends on the, you know, whether Boris in the UK allow, you know, whether Christmas is going to be going ahead as they've suggested. And, you know, we are talking, aren't we, about you've ordered some lateral flow tests for the company. So yes, we'll be able to test ourselves and our relatives to make sure that it's safe for us to have a Christmas lunch together.
15-minute results. I mean, I think they're probably going to be useful, unfortunately, for months to come. I mean, just going on holiday, returning to school, that sort of thing, but or going to see friends and family. Yes, good. This is a bit like Tenant, though, isn't it? Because we haven't had Christmas. We're in the future talking about it. There should be two pathways here. Or is it Bill and Ted's? It's more like, that's more our level, isn't it? It's more Bill and Ted's.
I was going to say Tenant.
Tenant. I mean, Tenant. Tenant. Tenant is like a lager.
Yeah. Or someone you rent a room to. Yes, Tenet. I have ordered. I've got that at home in the study. I haven't seen that yet. So, and I love a Christopher Nolan film. So certainly hoping to sit down with Mrs. Dawson and watch that at some point.
It'll be interesting to know what you think about it, because I've got my views on Tenet. We can perhaps discuss that afterwards.
Oh dear,
we have just had a discussion about Mandalorian. But you told me off.
You don't like the Mandalorian, so your views are null and void as far as I'm concerned.
Listen, when it comes to Star Wars, you always have to remember I was a 10-year-old boy in 1977, and the romance associated with those first three films will never be touched again in everything that spills out of the Star Wars universe. I'm always going to be a slightly grumpy old man about later Star Wars stuff, but I will give Mandalorian more of a go.
Mandalorian, you will like, if not bad taste, you have.
Thank you. I loved Rogue One. Loved it. It's been the best thing that's come out of
Rogue
One.
I think The Mandalorian will stand in. It's not quite as good as that, but it's certainly better than any of the other films. So,
okay.
Yeah.
We're at official ramble point, so it's time for us to sign off. Thank you very much indeed for being with us in 2020. It's an absolute delight. The only reason we sit in these seats every week and have our chats is because of you. So thank you so much indeed, and Happy New Year to you, and great success in 2021. All that remains for me to say, therefore, is it's a goodbye from him.
And a Happy New Year from me.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Get show notes, the podcast archive, and free resources to boost your writing career at selfpublishingshow.com. Join our thriving Facebook group at selfpublishingshow.com/Facebook. Support the show at patreon.com/selfpublishingshow. And join us next week for more help and inspiration so that you can make your mark as a successful indie author. Publishing is changing, so get your words into the world and join the revolution with The Self-Publishing Show.